The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from several sources. I'm going to start with some articles from AARP The Bulletin. And the first one is entitled Fraud Watch. Veto these election scams. With the 2024 voting cycle underway, crooks see an opportunity to steal. It's a big election year, and criminals are already out in force with scams aimed at stealing your cash and personal information while making you think you're taking part in the democratic process. Barbara from Michigan told the AARP Fraud Watch Network helpline she lost $500 to an imposter claiming to be President Joe Biden's press secretary, who texted her repeatedly for donations via gift cards. Desi from Florida paid $20,000 to a social media imposter for Donald Trump memorabilia and had to cancel his credit cards to protect his finances. Mary from California is trying to stop repeat credit card charges to a political campaign. Law enforcement and election officials across the U.S. are warning about voter registration scams. Criminals deploying artificial intelligence to impersonate candidates on the phone and social media, and schemes to garner campaign contributions and interfere with voting. Another danger, fake political surveys designed to steal personal data, including credit card account information. Election-related scams often target older adults simply because they're so politically engaged. Almost half of individual campaign contributions come from people aged 50 and older, says Brett Kappel, a Washington-based campaign finance lawyer. The months before a presidential election are a boom time for crooks. Politics brings out passion in people, which is always an opportunity to steal, says A.J. Nash, vice president at the cybersecurity company ZeroFox. Here's the scoop on three big election year consumer scams and how for you to avoid them. Scam PACs and bogus donations. Sounding like charities, scammers register as political action committees, PACS, with the Federal Election Commission. By phone, email, text, and social media, they solicit donations they say will support candidates and campaigns that promote worthy causes, from breast cancer awareness to firefighters. Instead, they keep most of the money for themselves, Kappel says. The haul can be huge. One large group of scam PACs raked in more than $140 million over the previous two election cycles, according to a 2023 investigation of SFEC records of PACs by the news website The Daily Beast. Donation-seeking scammers may impersonate candidates, campaigns, and political interest groups, sometimes using AI, riding on the sense of election urgency to push you to act, says Melanie McGovern of the International Association of Better Business Bureaus. Here's how to outsmart them. Never donate right away to groups that contact you, Kappel says. Give directly to candidates and campaigns by looking up their contact information online. You can review a PAC's finances by looking up the group on the FEC's website at fec.gov/data and check how groups accept payment. Legitimate PACs must have bank accounts and will accept credit cards, Kappel says. Scammers want you to use PayPal, send a check, or, worse yet, a gift card, because the money cannot be recovered. Then there's fraudulent surveys. Pollsters measure public opinion through surveys by email, text, social media, and phone. Scam surveys aim to steal your personal identifying information, often by offering a gift or other incentive that requires you to provide your credit card number, Social Security number, address, or date of birth. the Pennsylvania Attorney General's office warns. To outsmart them, don't assume phone surveys must be legit if you're on the National Do Not Call Registry. These types of calls are exempt, according to the Federal Trade Commission. A legit political call won't offer you a gift or ask for personal information, says Amy Nofsinger, AARP's Director of Fraud Victim Support. I do not participate in phone surveys, she says. You can't verify who they really are. Voter registration scams. Early in the 2024 primary election season, officials in some states were already warning about voter registration scams that use phone calls and text messages to fish for personal information. Voters are asked to confirm their registration by clicking on a link. Scammers may impersonate election officials and ask you to provide personal data to update or renew your registration. The National Association of Secretaries of State warns. Criminals exploit confusion about registration rules, which vary by state. The dates aren't as clear as when your taxes are due, notes Michael Kaiser, president and CEO of Defending Digital Campaigns. You can outsmart them. You can't register to vote by phone, and you can't vote online in a federal election. But voting rules vary from state to state, and so do deadlines for mail-in and absentee ballots. In many cases, regulations have changed since 2020. Cut through the confusion by going to the Secretary of State or Board of Elections for your state, Kaiser says. Don't click on a link in an email or text. Find trustworthy information about your state's rules at aarp.org/election guides. And this article was by Sari Harar, who's a contributing editor for AARP, who frequently writes about fraud. Now, this next article, also from the Bulletin, under the heading of Your Life, Protect Your Home Against Rising Waters. More homes are at higher risk of flooding, and what you can do. Now, some of you don't need this, but others will, so let's forge ahead. As floodplains expand and serious storms become more frequent, U.S. homes are an ever greater risk of water damage. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration tracks major flooding incidents. Last year, there were 4 flooding disasters with damage costs of at least $1 billion each. The total cost of those 4 disasters in 2023 was $9.3 billion. The cost to a homeowner from even minor flooding can be significant. A single inch of water can cause $25,000 worth of damage. Though it's impossible to floodproof your home, insurance professionals say you can take steps to minimize the threat of water. Mind the gaps. Use waterproof caulk and weather stripping to repair or close any gaps around doors and windows, or the entry points for cable or electrical wires where water could enter your home, recommends Courtney Klosterman, spokesperson for Hippo Insurance. Caulking and weather stripping tend to deteriorate, so you'll need to inspect these spots each year and repair as necessary. 2. Anchor outdoor items. Even if water doesn't get into your home, outdoor flooding can sweep away patio furniture, grills, or fuel tanks, damaging them or other items in their way. Fasten them to the ground or another large structure to minimize movement, the Federal Emergency Management Agency recommends. 3. Put in a sump pump. If you have a basement, a sump pump at about $1,500 to install will redirect groundwater to outside the home if levels rise past a threshold. That's a good way to not only prevent flooding, but also just basement seepage, says Value Penguin insurance analyst Divya Sangameshwar. Look for a pump with battery backup in case of a power outage. Purchase a small flood detector. These alarms, which start at about $15, can detect even a small amount of moisture in a space and alert you, typically via a smartphone app. Place them in your basement or other potential trouble spots. Then, if an alarm goes off, you can take steps to minimize damage, such as shutting off the electricity, moving items that might get damaged, or setting up temporary flood barriers. Send water away. Look at the slope of your yard and make sure that water runs downhill, away from your home. If not, you may need to hire a landscaper. Also, make sure that any gutter downspouts, or sump pump discharge pipes let water out at least 10 feet away from the house. This will keep water from pooling or seeping back in through the foundation. Find your flood level. Your local floodplain manager, contact your county government for guidance, can determine the base flood elevation, BFE, level for your home. This is how high water can be expected to rise in the worst flooding. You should move appliances or electrical items above that level, FEMA advises. Install flood vents. These are openings built into a foundation with doors that open only if flooding reaches a certain level. When they open, water flows into a crawl space, garage, or cellar instead of the living space. After installation, it's important to check them in dry times. Make sure your flood vents are free from debris. If they're blocked, it defeats the purpose. The National Flood Insurance Program, NFIP, requires flood vents in parts of homes below the BFE. Consider flood insurance. A standard homeowner's policy won't cover damage from flooding. For that, you need to purchase flood insurance through the NFIP. Such coverage is required in designated high-risk areas, but insurance professionals advise most homeowners to consider it. It only takes a big rainstorm to bring a few inches of harmful water into your home or basement. Have flood barriers ready. You can buy sandbags to place along doorways and other areas where water can seep into your home. But Stephen Colorando, director of claims with Plymouth Rock Home Assurance, says flood barriers are more effective. Filled with water, they can block the flow of additional water. They cost $4 to $15 per foot. And here we have a sidebar article, preparing for an evacuation. June was the start of the Atlantic hurricane season, but that disasters can happen at any time and not just in coastal communities. Everyone should be prepared for an emergency evacuation, says Jacqueline Rothenberg, Director of Public Affairs for FEMA. She recommends packing a go bag ahead of time so you aren't scrambling to find things at the last minute. Include these essential items. Medications and medical supplies. Pack about 3 days' worth of your prescriptions. Food and drink. Granola bars and bottled water are good options. Cell phone charger. Purchase a backup battery and be sure to keep it charged in case you can't get to a power source. Copies of your driver's license and insurance cards. Pack these in a waterproof bag so they don't get damaged. Other items to consider: extra clothing, toiletries, a flashlight, and enough cash to get you through a few days. During a storm, listen to your local news stations. A battery-powered radio is good to have on hand. To learn whether neighborhoods in your zip code need to be evacuated. To find shelters near you, use your smartphone to check the American Red Cross website, redcross.org. The FEMA app, which you can download at ready.gov, also provides disaster info. Remember that not all shelters are pet-friendly, so make arrangements ahead of time for your pet to stay with a loved one outside your immediate area. Even if your neighborhood is not evacuated, you should monitor news reports for shelter-in-place information. And these tips were from Julie Goldenberg. Now we have a Q&A with Doris Kearns Goodwin. This is also from the Bulletin. We got through times of turmoil and emerged with greater strength. The renowned historian, 81, looks back on the divided America of the 60s to find lessons about our own divided era. Your new book, An Unfinished Love Story, is a personal look back at the turmoil of the 1960s that began when you and your late husband and presidential advisor, Dick Goodwin, decided to go through 300-plus boxes of material he had saved from his speechwriting days with JFK and LBJ. We spent weekends doing it, reliving a decade. I was stunned by the dimensions of what he had kept. He was everywhere you'd want to be as markers of the 60s. He was with Kennedy on the plane during his presidential campaign, and at the White House the night JFK's body was brought back from Dallas. He was with LBJ at the great moments of the Great Society, then got involved with the anti-war movement. What did you find in those boxes? I knew all the things that had happened to him. His first wife died. Then JFK was assassinated. Then Martin Luther King Jr. and Bobby Kennedy were assassinated, and Dick's dreams of continuing the Great Society were cut short. But when we went through the boxes, something happened to him. It was almost miraculous. He recovered his sense of joy. Looking back on his life, I think he felt that what he had worked on had mattered. Did your views on JFK and LBJ conflict? Dick was loyal to the Kennedys always. It was partly because that's where his first understanding of public life came from, in his 20s. The Kennedy family was part of his upbringing. In my 20s, I worked with LBJ and became part of his family. So when we talked about those men over the course of our marriage, we often sparred with each other. Some poll would come out ranking JFK higher than LBJ, and I would say, "That's not fair. LBJ got everything through Congress that JFK tried to get through, the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, Medicare, and Medicaid." And Dick would answer, "Yes, but if JFK had been in office, what would have happened with the Vietnam War?" Tell me about Dick's experience skinny dipping with LBJ. Dick was called to the White House swimming pool to have a meeting with LBJ and Johnson aide Bill Moyers. Johnson was already in the pool with no bathing suit, so Dick had no choice but to take his clothes off and jump in. And while the three of them were swimming naked, LBJ started outlining what he wanted his program to be. That was the beginning of the Great Society. What do you think the 60s can teach us about our times? People often ask me, are these the worst of times? I think it's really important to remember that we've lived through really hard times before. The 60s were one of them. So were the early days of the Civil War and the Depression and World War II. But we know how all of those situations ended. We don't know the end of our story yet. Going through Dick's boxes made the 60s come alive for me with both promise and sadness. There was enormous promise, the real feeling that we were coming closer to our ideals. But the 60s also had great sadness. That's right. The way the 60s ended, with the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. and Bobby Kennedy, riots in the cities, violence on the campuses, there's a feeling that all hope had been lost. But in fact, the promises from the start of the decade, the birth of the Peace Corps, the Great Society Program, the Civil Rights Act, and the Voting Rights Act, Medicare and Medicaid, and the enormous amount of other legislation the 89th Congress passed, have permanently altered our lives. That's what Dick came to realize going through those boxes, that the 60s were a decade of enormous promise and the enormous fulfillment of that promise. How are the 60s different from today? The big difference, obviously, is the media. In 1965, when Alabama's state troopers descended on the peaceful marchers in Selma, everybody was watching the same footage because there were only three networks, and it fired the consciousness of people and led to a change in public sentiment. Today, because of the divided media and 24-hour breaking news, even if you fire the conscience of people and organize a march, the next news cycle comes along with something else. It's so ephemeral. I thought January 6th would change the country in many ways, but it's impossible to sustain that kind of feeling the way you could in the 60s. So how do we heal the divide? The quality we need to engender most in people is empathy. I've often thought, if we had a national service program, an internal Peace Corps, where we would take young people after high school and send them to different parts of the country to work on disaster relief and other problems, it might teach them how to understand other people's points of view and why they feel so angry at the other side. Then the talking can begin. What kind of leadership do we need now? I'm often asked who I would bring back among my guys, Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, FDR, and LBJ. And I always say that I would bring them all back. If you have to get something through Congress, you'd definitely want Johnson to be there. Teddy Roosevelt had that fighting spirit and charisma we seem to be demanding in this world of entertainment. And FDR would help us restore trust in the government. But what we need now are people of character in public life. That's what Lincoln had in spades. What gives you hope? History gives me hope. When I think of the eras I've studied, the Civil War, the Industrial Revolution, the Great Depression, the early days of World War II, and the 60s, they all were times of great turmoil. But we got through those times and emerged with greater strength as a nation, closer to our ideals. And this interview was by Hugh Delahunty. Next article from the Bulletin, AARP and Artificial Intelligence. We help you understand the promise and peril of the new technology. It seems as though just last year, few of us had much familiarity with artificial intelligence, but suddenly AI has become part of our daily conversations, with both hopeful and scary connotations. AARP has worked hard to put AI in its proper context as a tool to be used as well as a potential hazard to be avoided. We've created ways to inform older Americans on the best uses of AI and the dangers to watch for, and we have established policies for how AARP will use AI to make sure to protect your interests. None of us are going to put the AI genie back into the bottle, so it's imperative to understand what it is and how it's going to change the way we work, live, and play, says Edward C. Begg, a tech writer for AARP.org who specializes in AI. Here are some of the initiatives AARP has launched to help older adults get comfortable with AI. They created a landing spot on our website that will help people learn about AI. That site has videos, quizzes, and articles to walk you through the latest developments. Some articles explore AI's potential role in caregiving, mental health therapy, elections, job searches, travel planning, and entertainment, while others touch on the ethical issues surrounding AI, such as how to talk to your kids and grandkids about appropriate use in the classroom. You can learn more at aarp.org/AI. Senior Planet from AARP offers in-person and virtual classes to increase older adults' AI literacy. Courses span a variety of topics, such as everyday uses of AI and intro to chatting with AI. Some will even teach you how to create your own AI-generated artistic images and how to train your eye to identify such images. You can visit seniorplanet.org/AI to view online classes and consult the website for in-person course offerings at the closest Senior Planet Center. AARP plans to publish a book on AI. Details on how to get a copy will be in a future bulletin and at aarp.org/textbooks, where members can get 40% off. Not surprisingly, crooks have already figured out how to use AI in scams aimed at older people. We've published articles about AI fraud in the bulletin and will continue to write about it as scams emerge. If you think you've come across AI fraud, call the AARP Fraud Watch Network. Helpline toll-free at 877-908-3360. Again, 877-908-3360. We're also working with the News Literacy Project, a nonpartisan group dedicated to teaching people to recognize truth and to help older adults identify misinformation, disinformation, and fraud. As the technology evolves, AARP will help keep you informed so you're more likely to enjoy the promise while avoiding the perils of AI. Now we're going to finish up with a few more bits of information on how to save money. We're on the personal finance section. Consider a robo-advisor. If you can't afford a financial planner, a so-called robo-advisor program could help place your cash smartly across various sectors using complex algorithms. Annual fees are typically 0.25 to 0.50% of the portfolio value, compared with the typical 1% for a human advisor. Most major investing companies, such as Fidelity and Vanguard, offer robo-advisor options. Cut taxes for your heirs. As of 2020, many adult children who inherit an IRA must empty the account within 10 years. Problem is, that's often in their prime earning years when their tax rate is high. To spare your heirs, convert traditional IRAs to Roth IRAs and pay taxes in years when your own tax rate is low, maybe after retirement. Your kids won't owe taxes on their Roth withdrawals. Tap your 401k for emergencies. The recent Secure 2.0 Act allows you to withdraw $1,000 from a 401k or IRA once a year without the usual 10% penalty for those younger than 59.5, as long as the money is needed for an emergency. This can be a better option than racking up high interest rate debt. And know your credit card savings perks. These may include discounted or early access concert tickets, extended warranties, purchase protection against damage or theft, and rental car insurance. Find out what perks your card offers and use them. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you have enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.